Welcome to the Fed Life Podcast with Dan Seip from Serving Those Who Serve. In this podcast, Dan draws from years of financial experience to help federal employees overcome challenges that every Fed can relate to. Join us for this journey as we reach, teach, and serve to help you make the right financial decisions. Now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Fed Life Podcast. I am once again, as always, your host, Dan Seip. Additionally, I'm the branch manager here at Lee Seip & Associates and Serving Those Who Serve. Thank you for taking the time to listen. And as I always like to say, thank you for your service. And I'm starting to see other folks do it now, so I'm a little bit excited about that. But you simply do not hear it enough. This is part two of our two-part podcast covering the Secure Act. And don't worry, I am not here by myself. I am not working without Annette. I have the guru with me, the incomparable Ed Zerndorfer. He is here again as part of our ongoing mission to reach, teach, and serve you. Ed's opinions are awesome. I always like to listen to them, but I have to say the opinions of our guest Ed Zerndorfer are not the opinions of Raymond James or Serving Those Who Serve. This podcast is presented for information only, not to be intended to be taken as advice. All listeners should consult their personal advisors before taking any action. And we are back with part two covering the Secure Act. If you missed part one, this act passed at the end of 2019. Its initials are S-E-C-U-R-E. It came through as part of that spending bill at the end of the year. And that name stands for Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Enhancement. I don't know how they must just sit around with a thesaurus in Congress and say, hey, I need a word that goes with. And so we come up with that mouthful. One of the reasons that we have Ed doing this is he is a wellspring of federal benefits knowledge. He is also an enrolled agent with the IRS. So he really, really, really knows his way around taxes and has been a great help to a whole lot of people over the years. And he's a big help to us now. So last thing, there's going to be a lot of detail and data in here. So don't worry if you are not in a position to write it down or take notes or anything like that. This one will mirror his second FedZone article for this month. So it's two parts, first and second. So you'll be able to refer to it there. So Ed, let's keep pressing forward with the Secure Act and the changes that our feds need to know. Wow, this one is big, and we talked about some good stuff in the first episode. This one we're gonna be talking about some stuff that isn't quite as exciting and happy news as far as I'm concerned. So one of the really big changes is how our federal employees' beneficiaries will be impacted when they inherit IRAs, TSPs, or 401ks, because the stretch IRA provision has been basically eliminated, or so severely modified, it seems to have been eliminated. So why don't you begin with talking about how it worked before the change, and then go into after, so our listeners will have a reference point.
Okay, Dan, so with the change in the law, let's talk about what happened before the Secure Act became law. Mm-hmm. If a non-spousal beneficiary, such as a child, mm-hmm. such as a grandchild, would inherit someone's traditional IRA, or let's take the TSP, mm-hmm. As a TSP participant, an individual can name anybody as beneficiary of their TSP account. A grandparent can name a grandchild's beneficiary, but in so doing, the grandchild must withdraw the money within 5 years of the death of the traditional or Roth TSP participant. What I have recommended in the past is that if you name a grandchild, even a child for that matter, as beneficiary of your TSP, mm-hmm. that they should consult with a qualified attorney or accountant who understands the rules and have the money directly transferred to what is called an inherited or death IRA. This would occur upon the death of the TSP participant. Mm-hmm. And what does that accomplish? In so doing, the inherited IRA, whether traditional or Roth beneficiary, would have the option of taking lifetime distributions, receiving lifetime distributions from that inherited or death IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a grandchild who is 23 years old. What is the life expectancy of a 23-year-old? What, 60 years?
At least.
That beneficiary could get a check for almost 60 plus years, each year receiving a certain amount that they could reinvest or spend whatever they want to it. There's no guarantee it's going to last for 60 years, but let's say it's invested conservatively,
mm-hmm.
and they don't take too much out.
Sure.
They could take out more than the minimum, but they have to take out what's called a minimum required minimum distribution
sure.
each year, or minimum. So they take out the minimum. That money could last easily for 60 plus years if they do it correctly. That was the old law.
Okay.
Now, under the new law, the SECURE Act, if you name a non-spouse's beneficiary of a traditional IRA or, let's say, the TSP, and the beneficiary wants to take the money out of the TSP within the required time 5 years and put into an inherited or death IRA, now, if the person is not what's called an eligible designated beneficiary. Who is an eligible designated beneficiary? That would include a spouse. This does not apply to a spouse
uh-huh.
or to a disabled child
okay.
or to a sibling who's, let's say, within 10 years of the IRA owner.
Okay.
Then upon the death of the IRA owner, then the person, if again is not a not an eligible designated beneficiary, would have to withdraw the account within 10 years of the anniversary of the death of the original IRA owner. You got a 10-year deadline to get the money out of there. In the case of a traditional inherited IRA, you're talking about paying tax in entirety on the amount coming out after 10 years.
Sure.
In the case of a Roth IRA, there would be no tax due. However, once the money's out of there, it stops growing tax-free. You lost all that tax-free growth. You're talking about a payout of 10 years.
Gotcha. Now, you mentioned that if you were leaving it to a minor child, that would have a long time to go. Now, there's some changes in the rules with that now, too, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so a minor child, yes, theoretically, could keep the money in there forever. But under the new law, once they turn 18 or... 21, depending on what state they're in, the age of majority, or if they're still in school.
Okay.
Okay. They can keep the money in there. They don't have to take it out within, let's say, 10 years. But once they reach age majority or they're no longer in school, then they're going to have 10 years from that point to get the money out and pay tax in the case of a traditional IRA or in the case of a Roth IRA, take the money out, and then it stops growing.
Now, leading up to that date, do they take the smaller... life expectancy distributions?
I would recommend they'd probably take more because this way, in the case of a traditional IRA especially, they won't have such a huge tax bill if they waited to take it all out in 10 years. See, the problem is, Dan, is that in the case of a traditional, if it's a pre-tax traditional IRA, and that money's paid out in its entirety, in one year, you're talking about somebody who could potentially be subject to a very high tax.
Gotcha.
The tax rates. They could pay as much as 30 to 40% in federal and state and more and then additional state income tax if they take it out in a lump sum after 10 years. Again, I want to emphasize, they do not have to take RMDs during those 10 years, but once the 10-year period is over, they got to take out the whole thing.
Right. Ooh, that'd be a tax bite. So you touch on that surviving spouses, minor children up to the age of majority, but not grandchildren, disabled individuals as defined under strict IRS rules, chronically ill individuals, and individuals not more than 10 years younger than the IRA owner, generally siblings would fall into that category typically, are limited exceptions in this particular case.
That is correct, and I would caution people about as far as disabled individuals. IRS has some very strict rules about that. Before you decide to do anything, talk to your accountant, talk to your attorney about what is considered to be a disabled child, because the IRS has some very strict rules about that.
Sure, sure. Does that generally coincide with Social Security disability definitions?
generally they're parallel.
Okay.
But I would still make sure that you talk to somebody before you do anything that's not right.
Couldn't agree with you more. Now, also with that article, you bring up that folks who currently have a trust as beneficiary for their IRA, TSP, 401k, probably should take another look. Let's spend some time on that, because it sounded like, as I read it, that it could really be a problem. Why don't you walk us through that?
Trusts have been in the past one of the ways of paying out. If you have a child, grandchild who you maybe don't trust as far as inheriting a lot of money. Everybody has stories about that.
Sure.
The past that before they changed the law, that one could set up a trust in which the money would be paid out of the trust according to the dictates of whatever the TSP or IRA owner would like it to be paid out. Okay, mm-hmm. They'd have certain rules. Of course, the money paid out each year has to be at least the RMD.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the person doesn't trust the grandchild and so on. They want to make sure that no more than the RMD would be paid out. That's fine. And any money left in the trust would continue to grow until it's paid out.
Okay.
So you're talking about lifetime payments here. Now under the Secure Act, the problem is this, that any money left in the trust, again, would have to be paid out within 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's in the trust, if we're talking about what's called an accumulation trust, the accumulation trust is a taxable entity. Money that's left in there that's gaining any type of earnings, the trust has to pay tax. And Dan, trusts are no longer very favorable as far as taxes are concerned.
Sure.
Just to give you a comparison, the highest marginal tax bracket, federal marginal tax bracket, is 37%.
Mm-hmm.
To be in the 37% marginal tax bracket, you would have to have taxable income above $450,000.
Okay.
The same thing for a trust. The highest marginal tax rate is 37%, starts at $12,500 of taxable income.
Ouch.
So which means that somebody who keeps money in this accumulation trust in which there's earnings is going to pay a lot of tax in that trust. So again, if somebody set up this trust before the Secure Act, before it was set up, and is concerned about the tax consequences, they should talk to their attorney to get that trust reset up to have it redone so it's more favorable for the beneficiary.
Okay, so folks, and you know who you are. If you've got a trust out there as beneficiary and you had that trust set up, obviously before the Secure Act, which means if you did it before December, good idea to get back with your attorney, ask some questions, make sure you're set up okay. Now, you also shared a really interesting idea for an alternative, and it's more of a strategy than anything else. Ed, you know, where you talked about what somebody might do, you know, involving a combination of having the IRA and possibly some life insurance. What are your thoughts on that? That's unusual you come up with that, but it was very interesting when I read it.
The idea, Dan, is that one could use their RMDs, rather than keeping that money, definitely, one could use distributions from their RMDs. We're talking about the IRA owner. They take mm-hmm. money out of their IRAs, in the case of the traditional, pay the tax, do their RMDs, more if necessary, and use the distributions to fund a cash value life insurance policy.
Mm-hmm.
I say cash value or permanent because you can't buy a term policy which has a limited amount of life. You'd have to buy a permanent policy.
Sure.
Hopefully the policy doesn't have a lot of expenses, so most of it will grow,
mm-hmm.
okay, not be paid on expenses and fees. But the fact is that once the IRA owner dies, then the proceeds paid out from the life insurance will be tax-free mm-hmm. for the beneficiaries. So the life insurance is taking the place of tax-free, it will take the place of the tax-free income, which would be which would occur if the person was bequesting, was naming family members as the beneficiaries of their Roth IRAs, But now with the Roth IRAs, they're going to have to be paid out. The account has to be paid out within 10 years of the death of the IRA owner. With the life insurance, once the IRA owner dies, then the proceeds are paid out, the death benefit plus any accumulated cash value, tax-free, to the beneficiaries.
That's a pretty clever idea. And folks, we actually have another wing here, because you mentioned that it's Serving Lee, Servant Lee, Sipe & Associates. My partner Tom Lee, really, really, really brilliant guy, has been featured in publications for some of his work in charitable planning. He's taken a hard look at the SECURE Act and what charitable strategies might be out there where you could take care of your causes and your kids at the same time as well. And we'll be conferring with Ed on that. But there are a whole lot of people that are focusing on these things. And whenever I see, you know, new tax law come out, and if it gets more restrictive or something like that, Ed, I'm personally always amazed at the creativity that humanity has, because you know, within 6 months, you've got some ideas popping up, and you know, not all of them are great, but invariably there are some that are some really good nuggets and become great tools going forward. So I think this is going to be a little bit of an exciting time, because we've had this seismic change, and I'm looking forward to see what some of the minds out there come up with.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it very much, Dan, but I just want to mention something else about the SECURE Act in terms of these trusts and beneficiaries. If someone is already receiving benefits from, let's say, from a stretch IRA, in other words, the IRA owner died mm-hmm. before January 1st, 2020, those rules still apply.
Yep.
The rules we're talking about here for stretch IRAs, the end of stretch IRAs, only apply for beneficiaries of IRA owners who died after December 31st, 2019.
Yep.
Want to make that clear.
Now, that's an important point. When we put out some of our informational pieces, we did have a couple of folks reach back out to us because they are currently in the distribution phase of a beneficiary IRA. You folks are not going to have that problem. Now, you really gave us lots of good news in this article, Ed. So you also wrapped up with some warnings for our feds about other current tax benefits that may go on the chopping block. And I want to stress, these are not part of the SECURE Act as it passed, but rather things that may be considered by the Congress going forward, which means somebody's come up and put these ideas out there. The first one is one we've actually talked about before.
Yes.
And that would be, as you say, at the backdoor Roth, you know, contributing to a non-deductible IRA, and then pretty much almost immediately converting it. Tell our folks again how that might change for them.
Well, we just talked about the strategy about somebody over 70 and a half until now could not contribute to a non-deductible traditional IRA. Mm-hmm. That's no longer the case. They can. And that person is still working, or they have a spouse who's still working, but their income is too high to allow them to contribute to a Roth IRA directly. So they get a Roth IRA called through the back door. They put money into a non-deductible traditional IRA and then immediately turn around and convert it to a Roth IRA. That mm-hmm. would be allowed, and if you do it right away, no tax. Well, Congress is thinking about getting rid of that backdoor Roth IRA option.
Okay.
Okay. I know a lot of people are, you know, it's not law yet, but just the mere thought of that, because this is their way of getting getting their Roth IRAs. They have their income's too high, and the Roth IRAs can be good for a lot of reasons.
Sure.
Most of which is that fact that you don't pay tax on money coming out of the Roth IRA.
No, it's a great tool.
And it doesn't count towards for those people over 65, for Medicare Part B. When you take Medicare Part B, what you pay depends on your income. The higher your income, the more you pay for Medicare Part B. Well, qualified distributions from the Roth IRA are not included as part of your income for Medicare Part B purposes. So Congress is thinking about getting rid of it. Whether they do it or not, who knows, but it just had to give everybody a heads up. There's
sure.
a possibility.
Sure. Your next one, you know, I try and call a lot of things down the middle, but then there are times I just can't. This one makes no sense to me. and they may be considering required minimum distributions from Roth IRAs, which means Roth TSP. Well, you would have that anyway if you stayed in TSP, but requiring RMDs from a Roth IRA, I don't get what they're getting there.
Dan,
it's not raising revenue to bring it in.
But it's cutting down, and by taking it out, then you're going to cut down the amount of the tax-free growth. You're going to limit the amount of tax-free growth.
Okay.
And frankly speaking, Dan, I don't know why Congress does these things like this, because here they're asking us to save for retirement.
Sure.
Social Security, you shouldn't depend on Social Security. You should do it on your own. Save, save, save. And here they're going to take away this one gift, the Roth IRA, to help us save for retirement. And they're saying, no, we're going to limit that too. I don't understand it.
Yeah. I mean, they already hit it with causing you to do a 10-year withdrawal when it goes to your kids, and now they're going to hit it. Well, they haven't done it yet. Let's hope they don't. If you're listening out there, members of the House, members of the Senate, leave this one alone.
Well, one thing I want to mention about limiting it to your the growth is the elimination of the stretch IRA. One thing I have to admit, and this came up in Congress. One of the reasons they did this in Congress. One of the reasons was that one's retirement should be for one's retirement. You're not saving for retirement in order to fund your kids' retirement. This should be for you. I could see that argument, okay, that young people are not saving enough now, okay, on their own. Parents should not, pick up that responsibility. I could see that argument.
I see a little bit of that, Ed, but when you have the 10-year withdrawal requirement on the other side, they've kind of already addressed that, so why make pops pull it out too? But anyway, I think we're on the same page on that. So next up, but I really don't like this one, is a cap or limitation on the value of deductions for TSP, IRA, 401k type contributions. I don't like that because presently, if somebody puts $10,000 into their TSP, their taxable income goes down by $10,000. And now what they're saying, if you make over a certain amount of money, they're going to turn that into $8,000 or $7,000.
Well, again, this is one of their ways of limiting the amount that we could save. I also want to say this, that when it comes to the TSP, we have a real blessing because the TSP, unlike other qualified retirement plans, such as 401k plans, whether you earn $20,000 a year for the federal government or you earn $500,000, your income is, you're allowed to put the maximum amount of money into the TSP. You're not limited. Other plans, like 401k plans, have what's called discrimination testing. That if the highly compensated employees are putting more money into their plans compared to the lower compensated employees,
very true.
Then the administrators of the plan will check that, and these highly compensated employees will have to withdraw some of their money to keep it under the right balance. This is not the case with the TSP. As far as limiting the deductions, this has been proposed in the past. And frankly, this is another thing I don't understand, because a person's trying to save for retirement. This is their one good tax deductions, not to mention that they're saving for retirement. Why limit them?
Got me. Makes no sense.
It's not as if the government's contributing here. It's all coming from their paycheck.
Well, I didn't like that one. I'm pretty sure I hate the next one, which is the last proposal. And again, just proposals, folks. Don't panic. We don't want a War of the Worlds situation. Aliens have not landed in New Jersey. So if you're jumping into this midpoint, these are not in place yet. But keep your eyes open. You may need to write a letter here and there. This one is to limit the size that a qualified plan like TSP or IRA can get to.
I think it's in combination. So one of the proposals is to limit you to $3.4 million. That sounds like a lot of money. I don't think there are that many people out there who've accumulated in their IRAs, TSP, 401k, $3.4 million. But I'm saying that even if there are, why penalize them?
But also, Ed, sometimes these things hang around for a bit and they don't get indexed, as much as they should. So 10 years from now, 15 years from now, that's not going to look like as much money. Yeah, I know we've had historical low inflation right now, but you're going to have a situation where that's not going to look like as much as it does today.
Dan, I would like to bring up a counterexample to this. And let's take the kiddie tax. It's all called kiddie tax, sure, which has been around now for almost 34 years. Mm-hmm. And what the kiddie tax is that if a parent, let's say, takes some of their assets and gives it to their child, okay, they make a gift, then the money will be put in the child's name, and the child can only earn up to a certain amount of money with earnings,
sure,
without being paying tax at their rate, and then if it's too much, it'll be taxed at the parent's rate. In calculating the kiddie tax, any earned income the child has does not count. It's not part of the formula here for as far as taxing the child.
Gotcha.
But when the child takes that money and saves it, they put it into a mutual fund. They want it for long-term growth. Okay, put into ETF, whatever it is. The earnings are limited without having to trigger the so-called kiddie tax. And okay, what Congress is saying by doing that is a child is earning. Let's say they got a summer job. Mm-hmm. And Congress says, take your earnings and waste them. Don't invest them. Because if you are a very ambitious person and
yes,
you get a lot of you put the money into a good solid mutual fund or an ETF or something, we are going to penalize you and tax you on those earnings if you are a successful saver. The earned income, the wages, we don't care about. We're not going to tax you on that. But the earnings, we are. So don't be wise. Don't be smart. Don't invest your money. Just waste them. That's what the kiddie tax is. And this is what this is here. If you are a successful saver, you're making every attempt to be able to retire comfortably, okay? We're saying we're going to limit you as far as how much you could accumulate in your 401k, TSB, and IRAs. If you go over that amount, we're going to say you're going to lose that money. It's not fair, Dan.
I'm sorry. Couldn't agree with you more. You know, I really, really, really hate that one. I'm not crazy about all this. But again, folks, just proposals, just proposals, just proposals. But hey, I don't know. Senator Rubio, I know you're looking at this stuff. You don't like the I Fund. Tell you what, how about if you leave the I Fund alone for a while and take a look at some of this stuff and see what you can do about making sure it doesn't pass? Because then you're really going to be doing your feds and everybody else a really big service. I know you're a good guy. I just happen to disagree with you on this iFund thing. Feds deserve to have a state-of-the-art TSP portfolio. They deserve that. So let's get this thing through. Let's get the iFund updated. We've been waiting for years. Feds have been waiting for years. And I get it. It always takes time in TSP because it really does require an act of Congress. But now that we've got the right thing going on, let's let it be there. It's been a while since I did this, so this is Dan's book recommendation, The Infinite Game by Simon Sinek. It is dynamite. I wish Congress would read it too. I think it is a blueprint for business and societal thinking going forward. I think Simon is a great treasure to us. Grab it. Get it on Audible, read it, whatever your choice is. You will not be disappointed. It's a fantastic book. Well, Ed, great stuff. You know, you're on point as always, and you've done it again.
Taking
some tough topics, make it so the feds can understand what they need to know and make good decisions. Well, folks, that is a wrap. Ed will be back again. He's coming in every month, and we will continue with our work to reach, teach, and serve you. We are serving those who serve. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on the YouTube channel and very soon on Spotify. Remember to share it with your friends, strangers, and again, be nice to your enemies. Help them out. They might turn around. They might become your friend because the stuff is so awesome and Ed is so great. And, you know, Ed, we have regular listeners now, so we want them all to share it, right?
That's right.
We want to help as many people as we can.
Of course.
So check us out on Twitter and LinkedIn. Don't forget our seminars every month around the DMV featuring the guru, Ed Zerndorfer. Ed Live is an experience you don't want to miss. Again, little nugget out there. We have a special one coming up. I know it's going to fill up fast. It's taxes and TSP. It's right before tax time. You won't want to miss that. We'll be getting to that soon. If you hear this, call the office. We can give you the details on that before we blast it out live. If you're a podcast listener, you are getting this in advance. So nobody else knows about it. You're the first ones who are going to hear about it. My team's going to get really, really mad at me that I did that, but I don't care. If you listen to me, you get it. Again, Ed Live is an experience you do not want to miss. For more information, go to stwserve.com and click seminars and events. Be sure to read Ed every week in the Fed Zone. That's at blog.swserve.com and also at fed-zone.com. So for Ed, the crew at Serving Those Who Serve, and me, Dan Sipe, good luck, Godspeed, and above all, remember, it's your Fed life. Make it a great one, because you deserve it. We are out.
Thank you for listening to the Fed Life Podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Serving Those Who Serve or Raymond James. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning. Securities offered through Raymond James Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors Incorporated. Serving Those Who Serve is not a registered broker dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services.
Raymond James is not affiliated and does not endorse the opinions or services of any of the quoted professionals or their respective firms. Any opinions are those of Dan Sipe and not necessarily those of RJFS or Raymond James. This case study is for illustrative purposes only. Individual cases will vary.
Neither Raymond James Financial Services nor any Raymond James financial advisor renders advice on tax issues. These matters should be discussed with the appropriate professional. Investing involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected, including diversification and asset allocation.
Raymond James is not affiliated with and does not endorse the opinions or services of the quoted professionals or their respective organizations.